and joining Christopher Harris from harrisfootball.com, one of the best in the business in fantasy football. Mr. Harris, I know it's a very busy time, so thank you for a few moments of your time today. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you for having me.
I know the offseason, you spend hundreds of hours going over countless games worth of film. Did 60 minutes worth of film change your mind on anyone? It's kind of weird, but did we see anything in week one that was kind of, oh, well, okay then?
I mean, yeah, I watched it all. I don't know off the top of my head. I don't have like a... I spend basically 2 hours, an hour Monday, an hour Tuesday, you know, reviewing every single game on the show because I have been not sleeping and watching these 16 games. Boy, could we get some bye weeks? That would be amazing. If we get some bye weeks, I'd sleep more. But sure, I mean, of course, yeah, you watch and you are – all we're doing is speculating, right, up until the point when we actually see them play. And probably week one is the first time where we go now we're no longer speculating about who gets the carries or who's the number one receiver or what their offensive philosophy is going to be. Like, now you're actually getting to see it in action.
One of the games we saw last night, Monday Night Football, the Giants taking on the Pittsburgh Steelers, Saquon Barkley, someone who was drafted very high in most drafts, he was met behind the line of scrimmage an awful lot, got what he could out of it. But any concerns with how that Giants offense looked week one?
Yeah, for sure. Definitely concerns. Maybe more than any other coaching staff because, you know, I then subsequently watched the Tennessee game and the Denver did a similar thing defensively to try to stuff the line. And I watched the Buffalo Jets game and I watched – the Jets try to do the same thing to Buffalo, knowing that, you know, sort of a throwing challenged quarterback and let's make the thrower beat us kind of thing, the way that the Steelers did to the Giants. And in those other cases, the coaches seem to understand what to do when presented with this obstacle. And Jason Garrett, bless his heart, appears not to understand or have eyeballs because they ran one effective play with Saquon Barkley. It was that misdirection screen where Daniel Jones almost got killed, but he did get it off. And finally, Barkley had it in space. He ran for 30-something yards. Like you saw, you finally got to see Saquon Barkley. And they never ran it again. And they never really ran misdirection. They never really ran play action. Like, I don't understand what happened. I mean, it's a bad matchup. The Steelers are a tough matchup. And, I mean, Chicago's not a good matchup this week. And then 49ers aren't. You know, like, there's some bad matchups there for them. But, other teams seem to be able to adjust, and the Giants sure didn't last night.
From a Saquon Barkley owner perspective, you're obviously not dropping him. Kind of grin and bear it and just, okay, well, what I get is what I get, or do you try to move him for 85 cents on the dollar? How do you handle that type of a situation?
I think it's probably – in the case of Barkley, I think you ride it out. I think, you would never want to give blanket advice and say, always ride out every player ever, because that's obviously not true. In the case of someone as good as Barkley, even in times when you don't love the coaching or you don't love the play calling or whatever, there's still just going to be some explosive plays, and probably a lot of them. And who knows, they could self-scout and realize they didn't do a great job or they need to figure out play action a little better or whatever. In the case of Barkley, I think you're pot committed. It seems like a bad way to run anything, a business, anything else, like to be selling distressed assets. You know, I'd rather sell inflated assets. And he's an awfully good player, so I'm going to hang on, and I don't feel as happy with him as I did yesterday.
A lot of fantasy owners over the last, I would say, 24 hours, Googling the name Benny Snell, pretty widely available in Yahoo. He goes off the other side of the coin of the running game for that Steelers-Giants game. Is that someone who, if you have a fab budget, you're blowing a lot of budget on or really making a top priority this week to go out and get?
I wish we had better timing on exactly what James Conner's injury is. He's obviously often injured and he got hurt in the second quarter. Well, we heard it as far as what I know at this point, all I know is ankle, and he didn't really try to get back in the game. If he's, you know, if you got word that he's out 8 weeks, then Benny Snell becomes the number one guy to spend fab money on. You know, I would say it's his second year. Last year as a rookie, I mean, he was very productive at Kentucky, and he came in with a lot of hype, and he was bad. He was slow. He's not huge, but he's strong. Like, he's definitely more power back than not, and looked a little like Jordan Howard, just sort of like a generic power back, Peyton Barber. He didn't look that good last year. Last night, did he look better? Maybe. There was that one play around the left end when Jabril Peppers takes a bad angle and Benny Snell runs around him. And I admit, I sort of went, okay, well, maybe he has a little more speed than they expected, but it's one run. And I would value the idea that he might be the starter for the Steelers for sure. They sure concentrated on James Conner while Conner was healthy, but they have other running backs. They have a rookie I like, Anthony McFarland, so he could get one being active and getting involved. Put it this way, I don't think, almost no matter what, I'm not spending all my fab on Benny Snell. I don't think he's that good of a player, but like if it's a waiver priority thing and we hear that Conner's going to miss some time and you have the top waiver priority, I'm okay with that.
Almost similar type of question with the Indianapolis Colts running back situation. Marlon Mack goes down with an Achilles injury. You don't just walk those off. His season is done. Naheem Hines gets quite a bit of run with the Colts yesterday. So I guess a similar question, how much of a priority are you making him this week?
It's easier for me to call him the number one waiver ad than it is Snell, because exactly what you said. I mean, we know the other guy isn't coming back. And if we have imperfect information on James Conner, then Benny Snell could work out, but could also be a backup in 2 weeks, you know. So Naheem Hines probably is a backup. I mean, Jonathan Taylor has become one of the most valuable properties in fantasy because of this Marlon Mack injury. In that Jacksonville game, they basically only played Mack and Hines for a quarter and a half. They were honest about that. That's what they said was going to happen, and it was the rare case when a coach told the truth. But when Mack got hurt, certainly Hines was still involved, but Taylor became the primary ball carrier. I don't think Hines goes away, and he's certainly active in the receiving game, and he has lots of PPR, you know, Austin Eckler kind of appeal. He's a good little player for sure. I'll put it this way. I think probably as a waiver ad, Snell has more upside if Connor's totally gone, because he might have the path to the number one job, whereas Hines, maybe a little less upside, but also a less scary to invest in waiver wire wise, because it seems like the floor is probably a little higher.
Just in general, with fab budgets, and for those who are listening, you get a certain amount of money that you can spend on the waiver wire throughout the season. In leagues that I play in, it varies from $1 to $200. Just a general strategy, week one, upside is you're getting these guys now for 15 to 16 weeks, depending on your league format. Downside, you don't have this money down the road if someone comes out of nowhere. I guess just overall, what's your strategy when looking at fab budgets early in the season?
I think it really has to be sort of season by season and case by case. Case of someone like Hines, where, of course, we could get different information anytime, but what I'm working with information I have right now, it does feel like, how's Naheem Hines not going to give you an 800 scrimmage yard season with the upside, maybe 1,200, which isn't amazing, but it's something. It's pretty good, and he's really fast, has a potential. So, in other words, I feel more comfortable because I feel like I know what I'm going to get. But you're right, I'm not getting maybe a fantasy superstar, and those do come along every single year. We never expect it, and it happens. So it's the opportunity cost of not getting the shot at the fantasy superstar at exactly the right moment midseason when he hits. Like a receiver right now, where there would we look at what happened in week one and note any single receiver who feels like just a total league changer? Like, probably not. There's so many receivers, and in any given week, you never know who's going to pop. Every team has three who can go off, and you never know which one's going to be. And it's, I would probably say I wouldn't be spending very much fab money at all on receivers right now in anticipation of maybe something big happening down the road. Running back, I'd go case by case, but there are times when I would do it.
chatting with Chris Harris from harrisfootball.com here on the Big Show on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Speaking of wide receivers, though, one receiving situation that concerns me a little bit is Michael Thomas saying, I'll just play through this high ankle sprain. Generally doesn't go great. It leads to a lot of frustrating seasons, it kind of feels like. Is this a situation that you're concerned about at all, or is Michael Thomas just good enough that you just, again, have to just roll with it?
I mean, if you're not concerned, you're not paying attention. I'm with you. I'm concerned. You know, all he has to ask is Alvin Kamara, his own teammate, how it went last year. Not, I suppose not all high ankle sprains are the same, and maybe we'll find out it wasn't a high ankle sprain. It's a low ankle sprain, and he was exaggerating for the purposes of whatever. I don't know. Like, of course we should be concerned, very concerned. Consensus number one receiver, obvious first-round pick in every single league. Hadn't done much even before he got rolled up on. Very late in that game is when he got rolled up on. Yeah, we should be concerned. I don't know what we can do about our concern. If and when he's active for a game until we see him be terrible, I think it's very difficult not to use him. But, you know, it doesn't mean you can't feel gross when you're clicking the button. You know, it would have to be a pretty shallow league, and I would have to have pretty great wide receiver depth to bench Michael Thomas in week two if he's active. But, you know, then talk to me in week three, because depending on how it looks, we might change our minds about that.
Yeah, it's kind of like, I'm sure there are more recent examples, but it's kind of like Roddy White a few years ago, where just every week he was questionable. Every week it's, hey, it's Roddy White. How can you sit Roddy White? And every week it's, oh, three receptions for 25 yards is how I can sit Roddy White. But I guess the biggest effect of this, maybe the weapons around, like maybe this means a bigger role for guys like Emmanuel Sanders?
Maybe. Yeah, it's possible. I thought Sanders actually was pretty involved in that game, and he scores a touchdown, and it winds up like being three catches for 25 yards. It was the Roddy White. He gave you the full Roddy White. but like, I thought, you know, he drew two pass interferences. He had a long target. He had a different end zone target, and he scored a touchdown. He was essential. He was an essential part of New Orleans winning that game. I'm interested in, probably not interested in starting Sanders exactly in week two just yet, but I'm interested in rostering him. I have been since the summer. This week one, I think it's a great opportunity for people who actually saw the game and know how involved he was to kind of fool the people who are just looking at the numbers. And then you're right. Add on top of that, the idea that what if, you know, that there's now an X percent chance that Michael Thomas is a significantly reduced version of himself, that would seem to benefit.
One more situation I want you to touch on before we let you get out of here. In Green Bay, I know a lot of the offseason, and it was kind of funny, as you're someone who does avoid a lot of the noise, to hear guests come on and talk negatively about Aaron Rodgers. Like, hey, whoa, what? It was like we all just decided, oh, by the way, Aaron Rodgers is going to suck now. It's like, hold on, he's still Aaron Rodgers, and he still showed that against the Vikings. We know Adams is going to be good. We know Aaron Jones is probably going to be pretty good. And Aaron Rodgers, again, seems like he doesn't suck. Any other Green Bay weapons that you're trusting moving forward?
Probably not. Trust is a strong word, Peter. Trust is, you know, like I've looked down the barrel of the Marquez Valdez Scantling trust situation before and felt like I was not rewarded, but I could see adding him. I could see just let's see. I mean, Alan Lazard actually played more snaps than MVS did, but MVS got four deep shots, four bomb shots. Now, like, as much as I've spent the entire summer defending Aaron Rodgers, I will acknowledge it's not likely that that's the game plan every single week. That was probably had something to do with the idea that the Vikings had no pass rush, their top two pass rushers were hurt, and their corners are really young. But I just think this whole argument that now gets put forward, like that team is too run focused for my quarterback to be good. It just doesn't, you heard me say on my show all the time, it doesn't exist. Like every quarterback who we would ever consider rostering in fantasy throws it 30 times a game. That's plenty. Would you rather 50? Sure. But 30 is plenty if they're good. And Aaron Rodgers is pretty good. He's probably not going to be the QB1 every week. And that may be partly because against better defenses, players like MVS and Lazard won't be able to run free, and Rodgers won't have so much time to just pat the ball and throw the ball way up high in the air. But if I was going to add one and just see if this continues against other kinds of defenses, I think I don't want to start him, but I think I would choose MVS.
Chris, awesome stuff as always, man. Always appreciate chatting with you. Hopefully we'll get to do this again soon. Now go rest those eyes after countless hours of watching some football tape.
I mean, I'm literally going to go take a nap. I'm not even kidding, Peter. I'm literally going to go take a nap.
I have that effect on people. awesome stuff, man. Enjoy the nap.
I will enjoy the nap. Thanks for having me. I really love talking to you.